Ladies and gentlemen, would you all please stand for the Pledge of the Flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Please remain standing for a moment of silence. I would ask that in your thoughts and prayers that you keep Tom Toscano in your thoughts. Tom is, I spoke to Jesse this morning, Tom's wife, and Tom is in, right now is in hospice in grave condition at St. Charles. So please pray for him. Please be seated. Can I please have a motion for the approval of the minutes, please? Tony Falco, can I have a second?
Second.
Who is that, Douglas? And all in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're going to start with recognition of achievement. Don't we do recognition? Yeah, let's do recognition first and visitors next. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Murphy.
And I, in turn, will turn it over to Paul Kopp.
And I, in turn, will turn it over to Sagamore's principal, Steve Siciliano.
Steve, does the buck stop here?
Mr. Vimara, members of the board, Dr. Murphy, Cabinet, thank you very much for having us tonight. This turns into a yearly event at Sagamore, and I'm very pleased to announce that. As you remember, last year we had Lynn Kamayatek, who was honored by TV 55 as Educator of the Week. And this year, we're very proud to announce that Ann Tebbett has been selected by Dowling College and News 12 as Educator of the Month. As you can see, we're working our way down the channels, and we'll be with the big three before you know it. Just very proud of our staff at Sagamore. They give so much every day, and Ann is definitely someone who is special and unique, and it really doesn't matter what the endeavor is she leads, whether it's the building leadership team as the facilitator Ann leads, whether it was developing a media center so all of her colleagues have access to fine materials so they can teach their lessons, she leads. Whether it is our teaching and learning committee, which is made up of staff members to look at instructional leadership issues to try and further the education of their students, and leads. Frost Valley, Earth Day, you name it, in the building, Anne is a leader. And she is incredibly deserving of this award. We are all proud of her, and I know her colleagues are intensely proud of her as well. And I'd like to introduce to everyone Mrs. Ann Tebbett.
Congratulations, Ann. Thank you, Steve.
I'm going to start the second set of recognitions, and I'll start off by reading a proclamation from the governor. Whereas each year the School Board Recognition Week is observed by more than 700 school boards and school districts throughout the Empire State, whereas the men and women serving as members of the school board are dedicated to children learning and community, and have devoted many hours to elementary and secondary public education. Whereas the members of the New York local school boards are community leaders who provide an invaluable resource as local decision makers, responding not only to their respective educational needs of their communities, but also serving in the interests of the school children and their future. Whereas during the week of October 23rd to the 27th, 2006, special activities and programs will be held in the communities across New York State in recognition of this observance. And therefore, I, George Pataki, Governor of New York State, do hereby proclaim October 23rd through 27th as School Board Recognition Week. With that, we're here to do some recognitions of the school board. From myself and my cabinet, we take a great deal of pride and offer this recognition for the services of all nine of you, including our student board members, of all the work and dedication that the school board members put into. Many of the people in the public don't understand the amount of work that goes into this, and this is an unpaid service due to duty to the community. And this time that they put in as individuals is just incredible. So I know my cabinet and I are grateful for the support we've received from all nine members, including the two students, and we just hope for continued cooperation and service from each and one of you. We purchased a nice gift for everyone, and again, thank you very much for the work you do. With that, I think there are some other people here to present, and I think we have Mary Cavanaugh from the SAA. Mary.
Good evening. On behalf of the members of the State Gym Administrators Association, I'd like to take this opportunity during New York State School Board Recognition Week to acknowledge your dedication and hard work as members of the State Gym Central School District Board of Education. We understand how many hours you dedicate to improving the educational opportunities, programs, and facilities in one of the largest school districts of New York State, and we appreciate the time that you spend working to make State Gym truly sans égal. We would like to take this opportunity to formally thank you for taking so much time and energy away from your own personal lives to improve our ever-changing school district. On this occasion and in your honor, we would like to make a donation in the names of the members of the Sachem School Board of Education to the United Way of Long Island. It's our pleasure to extend a helping hand to others in your names. Again, thank you for all of your work on behalf of the Sachem community.
Thank you, Mary.
I believe we have Nancy Roberts here from our own Sachem PTA. Nancy. Maybe she's having the parking problems today. Oh, we have Dana here.
She's with my wife. I'm here with Nancy Roberts, who has your gifts. We're supposed to be here together. She's supposed to be here at 8 o'clock, and I guess she's running late. But on behalf of the PTA Council, we thank you for all that you do. We appreciate having a wonderful working relationship with you and having a give and take. And as soon as Nancy gets here, she'll have your gifts. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, Jane Deegan gave me a call, and she was unable to make it tonight, but she left a statement with Paul Kopp, and Paul's going to read from the nurses' unit to the school board. Paul?
I'm certainly no Florence Nightingale, but I'm delighted on behalf of Mrs. Deegan and the Nurses Association to read the following. By the way, Mrs. Deegan, the president of the association, is out doing what she's always doing in her spare time, teaching CPR classes for our staff and for other members of the community. On behalf of the Sachem School Nurses Association, I would like to extend our thanks and appreciation for the time and commitment that you give to the children and the entire Sachem community. At a time when "I'm too busy" is the usual refrain, your volunteerism is to be commended. Although it is a very sensitive and difficult time as we all work through these increasingly difficult budget years, we must look beyond that and applaud your willingness to give of your time and yourselves. In honor of your commitment to the children of Sachem, the Sachem School Nurses Association will make a donation in your name to the Carol Baldwin Breast Cancer Association. Thank you.
I believe we have Bob LaCourte from the SCTA. Okay. Mike Bergen from the SSA, the Sachem Supervisors Association.
President Palmera, members of the Board of Education, Superintendent Dr. Murphy. The Sachem Supervisors Association comprises of a group of individuals responsible for the operational functions of the district. As Vice President of the SSA, I welcome this opportunity to share on behalf of our members in recognizing the Board of Education members of the Sachem Central School District. The Board certainly knows that rewards come from hard work and determination. Here, in all of our Sachem schools, the success shines through each day. The goals set by the Board of Ed clearly strive to give each student the opportunity to excel. All board members are part of the team and the future of Sachem. As the members of this Board of Education, you have committed many hours and days of your life to enrich and enhance the lives of our students and the future of this community. Your contribution and efforts, we the members of the Sachem Supervisors Association applaud and honor each of you this 17th day of October 2006. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Douglas, this looks a little bit better than the cookies you bring every board meeting. I saw Don Haynes from the SSDEU, our custodial maintenance unit, back.
I'm Don Haynes, President of Sachem School District Employees Union, SSDEU. For those who don't know, we comprise of security, food service, grounds, maintenance, custodial, and driver messaging. All are members of SSDEU. And would like to welcome you and wish the board much success for the 2006 through 2007 school year. I believe the Board of Education has always been an ally in the struggles for our union that our union has had. My position as president and two executive vice presidents who were recently elected as some of the board members take our jobs very seriously. The responsibility and ability of a board member is very important as millions of dollars and thousands of students and residents are affected by your decisions. We both have been elected to jobs of service with little or no compensation. It is important that you know that SSDEU and the board share the same goals, and that is to keep our schools safe, clean, and well-maintained. I hope this president, along with our members and the Sachem Board of Education, will always have an avenue of communication open to help each other succeed. I'm sure the goal of the Sachem Board of Education is excellence in all areas of education, and SSDEU's part in your goal is to provide you with the skills, knowledge, and resources that only we can provide. Our union wishes you good luck and success as a governing body. A board member is not an easy job to do. SSDEU hopes for a complete success for each one of you. It is a very hard job, and we hope you succeed, and we hope we can help the best that we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
And the hardworking Ginny Gerber.
Good evening. My name is Ginny Gerber, and I am the Chief Shop Steward for UPSEU, United Public Service Employee Union, the organization that represents the 141 clericals of the Sagem School District. First, I would like to thank Dr. Murphy for inviting me here tonight to celebrate School Board Appreciation Week. It is with some sadness that I come before the board this evening. A short 27 years ago, a young woman in her early 30s was appointed as a clerk typist at this October board meeting and started her career at Sagem. Now, being in my early 60s, this will probably be the last time I speak to you on this very special night, because in late summer of 07, I hope to retire from Sagem. The life of a board member as well as a clerical in Sagem is not an easy one. You, however, receive no pay, no pensions, no perks, but plenty of unsolicited advice on how this district can be run more economically and efficiently. Yet, Board of Education members are volunteers and play an important part of the educational team that can make a significant difference in the lives of students, teachers, clericals, custodians, and anyone else whose lives you touch. You are indeed a rich resource of community members who can assist district administration and staff in diverse responsibilities and expectations. The road ahead this year looks a bit rosier than it did a year ago, but you still have ELA scores, science scores, and a host of others that have to be diagnosed and to explain to our parents, plus the ever-present threat of security in our schools. I am sure, however, that with the administrative team you have assembled, Paul Kopp, Gail Grenzen, Jill Garish, Bruce Singer, and Denise Kleinman, all led by our superintendent, Dr. Charles Murphy, I feel I can leave my district of 30 years in excellent hands. And over my morning coffee after I retire, I will look forward to reading about all the wonderful accomplishments of Sagem. There really isn't much more I can say that hasn't been said in previous years or by previous speakers about the dedicated service of this board. It is with my deepest gratitude to the Sagem Board of Education and the Sagem family for 27 wonderful years. I only hope you all can say the same when it is your time to leave. And finally, in the words of the broadcast journalist Edward R. Murrow, I say good night and good luck.
Thank you, Ginny.
That's it, Mike.
We have two visitors. Valerie Caffarelli. Val, are you here? There you go.
Dr. Murphy, Mr. Palmera, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Valerie Caffarelli, and I am here to speak to you on behalf of myself and my colleagues, the teaching assistant staff. I am a 32-year resident of this school district who has raised three very successful children, due in no small part to the very excellent education they received here at Sagem. I am proud to say that one daughter is a physician's assistant, one daughter is a physical therapist, and one daughter is a social worker. I spent 20 years of my children's education as an active, involved parent. I also work side by side with teachers and administrators on many educational committees dedicated to improving education for all children in the Sagem community. I wrote letters to the editor of Newsday. I marched on Hopog and Albany for educational funds. I worked tirelessly to help pass the many school budgets during those years and continue to do so because I value so highly the education Sachem provides. I spoke the truth as I saw it to this board and the community, even when it was an unpopular position and caused difficulty for myself and my children, in order to improve the Sachem community. I have spent countless hours educating myself on the ever-changing educational laws and issues that shape what happens in education. 12 years ago, I was overjoyed when, after a 20-year career in insurance, I attained a personal goal and was offered a teaching assistant position in this district. And I am very proud to say that it has been a joy and an honor to serve this district and the special education students I work with on a daily basis. I have spent these years working diligently to improve the skills and the professionalism of myself and the dedicated teaching assistants with whom I am proud to serve. I am passionate about my work and about bringing the best I can to Sachem. I have also enrolled and have been trained as a facilitator to provide workshops developed by NYSET's Education and Learning Trust to enhance the skills of my peers. Being a teaching assistant is not a job to me, but a very important career. I take my responsibilities very seriously, as do my peers. I am proud to be one of many who are helping our students achieve at their highest levels and fulfill their potential. It is with great sadness that I come before you and ask why you do not appear to hold myself and my colleagues with the same esteem and professionalism. Why do you feel it is acceptable to continually have your representatives sit across a bargaining table with no direction or intention of actually bargaining? Why do you feel it is acceptable to continue protracted meetings with no real conversation to move us toward a settlement for over a year and a half? Why the attorney, who is paid a substantial retainer, money which comes from my tax dollars, is never available to me? Why, after providing her with 6 dates from now until December, the only available date was December 18th, the very last date we gave? Why, after many individual comments have been made by many board members and the superintendent that you are committed to settling this contract, based on your actions, I and my colleagues cannot believe you? As a longtime resident and taxpayer in this district, I am acutely aware of the dire financial position this district has been in for the last 2 years, and it is very important to me, and it was very important to me, to work to pass this last school budget. Dr. Murphy expressed on several occasions that there was money appropriated within that budget to allow for the settlement of all contracts, and yet we have seen no movement of any kind in that direction. I respectfully request this board to direct your representatives to treat us fairly and professionally, as we have treated this district, and move forward and settle the teaching assistant contract now. Thank you.
Bob LaCourt.
Good evening, Mr. Palmara, Mr. Boddy, members of the Board of Education, Dr. Murphy, and members of the administration. I was very saddened to hear at the beginning of the meeting about the condition of Mr. Tompkins. Tom was a long time friend of mine, still is, and I'm very sorry to hear that his health has taken a turn for the worst. He has battled this situation unbelievably, and I'm sure the Sachem family and all the prayers will be with him as we move forward. My name is Bob LaCourt, and I am president of the Sachem Central Teachers Association. I represent the teacher assistants, interpreters, the teacher aides, and the teachers. Tonight is a special night for all Board of Education members, as you are recognized for your dedicated and continued service to the Sachem community. You've been elected to a position of leadership in this district, and you served in this capacity, in an entirely voluntary manner. I'm sure everyone here tonight recognizes the time and energy you devote to this position and acknowledges the demands it places on you and your family. School board members are the elected educational leaders of their communities. You determine policies that govern the operation of the Sachem Central School District. When you assumed this position, you accepted this responsibility, and your decisions reflect those obligations. One of those responsibilities is to deal with the financial obligations you have by settling contracts. It is in this area where I feel you have fallen short of your responsibility. Let me explain why. You've chosen to have a law firm represent you in these negotiations, and you have appointed individuals employed by the district to be your representatives at the negotiations table. As you know, contract negotiations are underway with the Sachem Central Teachers Association with the three bargaining groups whose contracts have all expired. The teacher assistance interpreters and the teacher aid group had their contracts expire on June 30th, 2005, and have worked for over 15 months under the terms and conditions of the expired contract. Both groups began the negotiations process several months before the expiration of the contract, and both groups found it extremely difficult to even schedule negotiation sessions with your representatives. Their schedules often made it impossible to find timely meetings with one another. When we did have a meeting, very little progress would take place. Months and months went by before our frustrations reached a point where we finally had to decide to declare impasse. Towards the end of the last school year, a mediator was appointed by the Public Employees Relations Board, and several mediation sessions were scheduled. While substantial discussions have taken place with the teacher aides, almost no progress has taken place with the teacher assistants interpreters. This is unacceptable. In fact, at the end of September, the SCTA reached out to the district again through the mediator in an attempt to schedule additional meetings. We provided the mediator with 7 dates, starting with October 4th and ending with December 18th. We were informed last week that the first date your group would be available to meet was the last one, December 18th. Please, tell me, how can I tell my membership that you and your negotiating team are taking this process seriously? I also need to ask you, when are you going to respond to the latest proposal with regards to the teacher aid contract negotiations? It has been well over a week since any sort of communication has taken place between our two groups. Again, this is unacceptable. And finally, I would like to focus on the status of negotiations for the teacher contract. As you know, this group is also at impasse. The first mediation session with the mediator took place on Monday, September 18th. At that time, both sides agreed to pare down their proposal to a number recommended by the mediator. We scheduled 3 additional mediation sessions that night, and the first one was last night, and there were 2 more scheduled in November. It finally looked as though we'd be able to make some progress. However, last night, we were presented with a package of proposals which far exceeded the recommended number of proposals by the mediator. Needless to say, the evening did not proceed very well beyond that point. The mediator eventually met with us, and he came to the conclusion that he wouldn't be able to continue last night with the process as he did not feel a deal could be made. We left the session last night extremely frustrated and disappointed, and that's partly why I'm here tonight. I want you and the community to know that the SCTA wants to resolve the differences that, and we have, we want to resolve the differences we have and settle a fair and equitable contract. We are ready, either during the workday or after the workday, to have significant discussions related to the issues at hand. We need to see a willingness on the part of you, the Board of Education, and your representatives to settle these contracts. This has been unacceptable to this point. Is that the message you want the rest of the membership to hear tomorrow? Once again, I have to go back to comments that were made by Dr. Murphy and were alluded to here earlier by Val Caffarelli. These comments were made prior to the school board budget vote, when he told the community that there was funding set aside in the budget to settle the contractual obligations it has. If that's the case, then why have we been spending the better part of 5 months since that time spinning our wheels in unproductive contract negotiations? The entire membership of the SCTA is growing more and more frustrated and agitated by the lack of movement in these negotiations. The SCTA members who came here tonight They represent a very small portion of the members who are dissatisfied with what has been taking place. Mr. Palmera, Dr. Murphy, I implore you to settle these labor issues. Anything else is unacceptable. Thank you.
What's that?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a five-minute recess, so those of you who would like to leave may do so.
How'd you make out? How'd you make out with our meeting? Did you find out anything? Pool. The pool.
I don't know this will be there.
Just wondering if you had that conversation with her.
I don't have any of the numbers.
Always gonna have
moment.
Good.
And Diane, they have all the facts and figures. If I could get them to you, I would.
You know what? I can't lift my shoulder up.
Fix that. We have the technology.
I'm telling you, I don't know what it is.
Legs are fine.
Please be seated. Let's get started, folks, with the business section.
Yes,
Folks, if you're sitting on the sides, you're welcome to move to the front. Would someone please close the doors in the back, too? Joey, could you get those doors, please? Thank you. If you don't have an agenda, we do have some around. Does anybody need an agenda? Anyone need an agenda? Ron's got some. Well, the crowd thinned out a little bit. Let's begin. We're on page 2 of the agenda. It's business items. It's a consent agenda for business items D1 through D2. Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
John Siegel, second, please. Rob Scavo, all in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Personnel items. Consent agenda for personnel items is items E1A through E4A. Begins on page 3 and ends on the top of page 12. Can I have a motion? Mike Boddy, can I have a second, please? Who was that? Fred Tenary. Any discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Action items. Carol, do you want to read these? Yes, dear. Go ahead.
Approval of the recommendations from the Committee on Special Education.
Can I have a motion, please? Tony Falco, second. Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions? Discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Next.
Adoption of the District Plan of Special Education Programs and Services for 2006 to 2008 school years.
Motion, please. John Siegel, second. Deborah Slinkowski, any discussions or questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Authorization for waiver of formal hearing from the Department of Health.
Can I have a motion, please? Was that Douglas Duncan? Thank you. Second, please. Don't be shy. Step up. Rob Scavo. Any questions or discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 13, number 4.
Approval of Betty Sheffy, guest speaker at the Administrative Leadership Team.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Mike Boddy. Any discussion? Questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Item 5.
Approval of salary increase for substitute staff hourly employees for 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Who is that, Douglas? And second by Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions or discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of preschool tuition increase for 2007-2008 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scavo, can I have a second? Fred Tenary, are there any questions or discussion on this item? All in favor? Opposed?
Appointment of alternate evening high school staff for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, second. John Siegel. Any questions or discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Appointment of SAT preparation program teachers.
Motion, please. Who was that, Fred? Fred Tenary? Second. Mike Boddy. Any questions or discussion? All in favor? Thank you. There's no one opposed. I'm sorry. We're on page 15, item number 9, folks.
Approval of coaching assignments for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scavo, second. Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Decision of 2006-2007 extracurricular clubs and activities as listed.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Excuse me, was that Deborah? Any questions or discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of 2006-2007 extracurricular clubs and activities as listed.
John, I'm sorry, Rob Scavo. Second is Dave Aranow. Anyone have any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 17, I'm sorry. Item 12.
Approval of 2006-2007 proposed field trips. Change of date.
Can I have a motion, please? Fred Tenary, second. Who was that? Douglas? Douglas Duncan. Any questions or discussion? All in favor? Opposed?
Approval of 2006-2007 proposed field trips.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Sinkowski, second. Who was that? David? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 18, item 14.
Approval of an agreement between the Sachem School District and Franklin Institute Science Museum for a field trip.
Can I ask a question on this, Carol? I don't know what the procedure is. Could we do a consent agenda on, at least 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18?
That's negative.
Negative. Well, at least I asked. All right, keep going.
I already read that.
Oh, which one? I'm sorry, the one.
14.
14. Can I have a motion, please? Mike Boddy. Can I have a second? John Siegel, all in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval and agreement between the Sachem School District and Mass Marketing.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Mike Boddy. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval and agreement between the Sachem School District and Crest Hollow Country Club.
That's Mike Boddy. Can I have a second, please? John Siegel. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval and agreement between the Sachem School District and the AHRC of Suffolk.
Mike Boddy, can I have a second, please? Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions? All in favor? Hello? All in favor, everyone? Anybody opposed? Thank you.
Approval of an agreement between the Sachem School District and the American Red Cross.
Can I have a motion, please? Mike Boddy, second. Who was that? Douglas? I'll get you next time, I'm sorry. Douglas Duncan, all in favor? Opposed? Item 19.
Approval of a declaration of obsolete portables.
Can I have a motion, please? Was that Douglas Duncan, second? Is there a second on this? Dave Aronow. Discussion. Go ahead, Colin.
Dr. Murphy, and by declaring these portables obsolete, does that, again, prevent us now from selling them? Or if we could, or is now the next process just to get rid of them one way or the other?
I spoke to Bruce about this, and Bruce can add on to this, but we've tried to sell these. We've put them out to bid. We've made offers. We've had school districts come and take a look at them, but nobody seems to want to buy them. The next step in after this, the declared obsolete, is to put them out to bid on a disposal sale, and hopefully there's someone who then will want to bid on these items to then take them away. If we don't get anyone to bid to just take them away, that they might say, well, we'll cart it away for whatever the price may be, then we're going to have to just, the board will have to make a decision whether they want to cart these away themselves, and there's a price tag to just carting these away themselves. So right now we're going to put them on a disposal sale. Hopefully someone will then say, I'll take it on the sale, and then they'll cart it away themselves. Bruce, you want anything to add on that? That cover it.
Yeah, you are perfectly correct.
The further Charlie. Question I have is that where do we put this out for sale to? Where does it go? Does it go public? Does it go just to schools?
No, it's a public bid.
Public bid. Where is it advertised? In our papers?
Newsday is the official paper of the school district.
So private people can look at this and purchase it if they want.
We'll accept any bids.
My question, and it probably has to do with the disposal of it, and you've quoted some numbers as to what it would cost to take these away by ourselves. And my question, and maybe for an answer for later on, if we have to pay to take these out of here at that number that you've given us, could we not just take them apart ourselves and dispose of the materials ourselves in some way, you know, a proper way, without the cost of carting them away? Is that a possibility we can have to, you know, we don't have to take them down right away. There's no emergency to get rid of them all at once. But the cost to take them away seems to be prohibitive because of the towing, and you've mentioned
it's high.
Yeah.
It's very high.
For having three or four or five of our facilities or people take a sledgehammer to that thing and just dispose of it, maybe a lot cheaper than having them, you know, carted away.
We get some chainsaws going, and we're going to have a good old time.
It's really a question then to you, right, if that's a possibility, rather than having to expend that kind of money to tow them away.
No, I no. You could do that, and we can get some characters from down south and bring them up here. And
well,
Well, it's a lot of money, Tony. And just so the public knows, you know, we had put this out to bid a few years ago, and it was about $70,000 to get rid of these things. So it's very expensive, and we have a number of them out there. So you could break them down over a couple of years and do a little bit each time, and then just have it carted away the pieces. But it's going to take time.
Well, so if the board is agreeable, I'd like to put it, you know, really put it back in your hands to see if there is another way other than expending that kind of money to toll them away to get rid of them. I mean, I don't know if it's possible, but
we're going to put them out.
We'll put about the bid first, and then we'll see what happens. Make a decision after that.
Okay.
Because it'll be a big expenditure, but we also have to then check in if we do have to chop these up. What kind of pieces can you dispose of, and what kind of pieces are declared like hazardous type of materials?
That's the question. Yeah, thank you very much.
I have a question about this. Does anyone else on the board have a question? Rob, go ahead. I'll wait.
If we can't get a company or an organization to take these units through a sale, are we able to donate these items?
Again, we would love to donate them if someone is willing. The disposal sale, someone can come up and offer us a dollar right now, Rob, and we may just take it. If part of it is you carting it away.
Mm-hmm. Because so, what I'd like to see also is if we're not able to get rid of these items through a disposal sale, maybe you look into donating it, whether it's to a sports league, some type of charity that might be able to put these trailers to good use. I don't know. I mean,
we offered them up to when Middle Country had the fire few months ago. We offered it up to just basically anyone. If you're interested in taking one of these trailers away,
like a Habitat for Humanity. I mean, something that could.
Didn't we contract the Katrina people too?
Right. I contacted last year Department of Homeland Security during their needs. They were not interested in transporting these, so we've reached out on
American Red Cross.
It's the type of trailer that it is. I mean, it's designed really for a classroom. They're not as secure. That's really the issue. SYSL, they looked at it because they couldn't secure them properly as a container.
But we use it for storage behind Samoset. Do we, possibly for receiving?
Well, that's part of they're connected to electricity, sewers.
Right.
They have bathroom facilities in each one of them. The problem is after a while they start to look very hideous and they become like a blight on the community. Places where kids are going to hang out. One of the areas that the Samoset graffiti people hit was the trailers in the back of Seneca people. They hit in the back of Seneca and they really marked up those trailers. They're easy markings for vandals and things like that, especially if they're not being used.
I mean, me personally, I would like to see, if we're going to cut them up as a last resort only,
I think one of the issues that came up, because folks from my church were interested in them, and the problem was the moving. I know there are companies that will move them, but the problem was restoring the site that they take. That was part of that bid at the time. And that was a major thing because they didn't have anybody to do that, and that became quite costly. The question I have, though, is when you say we can cart them away, where do we take these things? I could just see us going out in the middle of the night someplace and finding this in my driveway or something. Where do they go? I mean, where do you bring something like this? Seriously, if we're not going to – suppose we push comes to shove, we can't cut them up, whatever. So you say, all right, we'll cart them away. Where the heck do you bring these things?
Bruce knows
We would contact Ursau, see if there's any recycling. You know, if we're going to get to that point, as Tony suggests, maybe the scrap metal, but there's more than metal. There's glass. There's components. There's heating components. There's wood.
Bruce, you have a big yard, don't you?
Yeah, no more.
No more.
But you'd really have to contact even the carting companies and say what you're going to take. There could be you don't know what's the makeup of these things.
Let me ask this. If in the event somebody came up and said, look, I'd like to have this trailer, but I don't have the wherewithal to, fix the site, are we willing to do that if they're going to take it away?
Last year, that's what happened with Riverhead Schools. They wanted us actually to move it for them. And
oh, sure. That's nice.
That's why it was no deal. So the concrete pillars go down 6 feet, so we'd have to restore the site. You have to cut the electricity, the sewer lines, the water lines. So it's preparation to restore the fields where they've been sitting on for the last few years.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor. What do we have at this point? Is there another question, Deborah? I'm sorry.
Yeah, just a spinoff of what Tony said. If we're able to break them down and sell it off for scrap, can we do that? I mean, why don't we look into that?
This resolution will allow us to do that now.
Okay. We'll maybe be able to make some money.
Carol, what do we have on your deck right now?
We have a motion by Mr. Duncan, seconded by Mr. Ariel.
Okay. We have one more question. Go ahead, John.
Just want to clarify, by us approving this declaration, that's what we do. We are not authorizing the spending of any money to dispose of these at this point, correct? That would have to come back for board approval. Thank you.
All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the acceptance of assignment of contract from Island Waste to Winter Brothers.
Can I have a motion, please? John, seconded by David. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of a memorial garden donation from Waverly Avenue School.
Motion, please. Dave Aranow, second. Douglas Duncan. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? We're on page 20, folks. Number 22.
Approval of a contract between the Sachem School District and Rachel's Challenge.
Can I have a motion, please? Mike Boddy, second. John Siegel, all in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of proctors for the PSAT and PLAN examinations.
Can I have a motion, please? Greg Tenary, second, please. Who's that? Rob Scavo. Any discussion on this? All in favor? All in favor, everyone? Okay, thank you.
Approval of a contract, of Connect Ed contract.
Can I have a motion, please? That was Rob Scavo, second by John Siegel. Any discussion on this item? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of H2M Architects to review remaining punch list items by Einhorn, Yaffe, and Prescott.
This is item 25 on page 21, everyone. Can I have a motion, please? Who is that? Douglas, second. Second by Fred Tenary. Any discussion on the item? Go ahead.
They had estimated it's going to take 24 hours in work time to get this done right. Are they pretty? I know it's an estimate, but is that something that's pretty close that they feel they can get done in 24 hours?
Based on the punch list items that were supplied by our construction managers, that's what they believe. We could give a running tally to the board. We got one contractor today, Savemore, who said that, you know, it's not going to take any time as near as the previous construction managers envisioned. They said the work was already completed. They just needed H2M to sign off on it. So that was relatively easy. And he was our first contractor.
And as far as keeping track or logging the amount of hours that they bring in, will they provide that?
Jointly, we would keep track of it, and that's how we'd bill them, and we could update the board, Charlie and the board, sure.
Any other questions on this? John?
Wasn't the checking of this punch list going to be reimbursed by the subcontractor? Savemore?
On that particular case, right, because it was a third visit. But some of the other ones, as attorneys, the previous architects refused to certify that the work was done, even though the contractor did the work. But on one case, the contractor's bid said, if the architect has to come back three times, then it's back charged to the contractor.
John, talking to the microphone. So
this particular inspection the district's liable for?
He said it's going to be relatively quick because he's done with, I mean, this is Savemore today. He said H2M is not going to have to spend much time because he already did the work. H2M just has to go down and certify it.
Any other question or discussion? All in favor? I'm sorry. Go ahead. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval
Item 26.
Approval of H2M Group to approve capital projects.
Can I have a motion, please? Douglas, second by Rob Scavo. All in favor? Oh, I'm sorry. Questions?
Dr. Murphy, it says it, but I just want to confirm. These projects are only the projects that were included in the 2627 budget approved by the voters. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of resolution number one, appointing Dr. Alan Reichman as designated school medical instructor.
Can I have a motion, please? Mike Boddy, second, please. John Siegel, is there any discussion? I'm sorry. All in favor? Thank you. Item 28.
Approval of resolution number two, pursuant to education law section 913.
Can I have a motion, please? Dave Aronow, second. Douglas Duncan, any discussion on this item? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 22, everyone.
Approval of resolution to reappoint emergency conditional appointments.
Who is that, John? Second by Mike Boddy. Any questions on this or discussion on this item? All in favor? Opposed? That was item 29. All right, monthly reports, damage and loss summary. Does anyone have any questions or comments on that? Item 2, determinations are for the Committee on Preschool Special Education. Any questions? Child care, community education, and building usage, financial report. Any questions on that? Are we going to have a report on the community ed program? Is that correct?
They're still working on it. They're finalizing it.
Okay.
It's very detailed.
Okay, great. Any questions on item 3? Board of Education subcommittees, any questions on those? Deborah.
I just wanted to remind our audience about the SACHM Legislative Committee forum that's going to be held at Sequoia October 19th at 7:30, and we're going to be discussing educational funding. So I'd like to encourage you all to be there. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, the question is that we have this, the Budget Committee and the Audit were existing committees. The Capital Project is a new committee. Is that committee been, have they seated yet, and have they had their any meetings? Or
They haven't gathered together yet. Bruce, Mike Berg, and Ed Miller, and myself, we're going to go over the proposed list that would come out from the building principals. We need to look at it and then go through it a little bit with H2M, and then we're going to meet with this Capital Project Committee and set the direction and what they're supposed to do with the list and move from there.
The list, of course, will be the board will get the list with at the same time.
Right. I don't have the list yet, so when I get the list, we'll then put it out to the board, and then gather this committee together.
The people that were picked, and have they all agreed to sit? And do we know yet if we have any?
Carol called them all. Contacted them all and let them know, so they're all in agreement.
I think we only had one last year.
Know that they are alternates. Okay, thank you.
Everyone was notified, too. Is that correct? Thank you, Carol.
Yes.
I know that was a lot of work.
Pro and con.
Right. Douglas, you had a question. I'm sorry, Doug.
Tony got me already. We approved these guys on Thursday, and I wanted to know if we've reached out, if anyone has declined a seat now or anything like that, but you already answered that question, so...
We had one declination from the Legislative Committee, and everyone else is moving forward.
Any questions on the Board of Education goals? Okay, it's presentation time. I'll turn it over to Dr. Murphy.
And again, I'll turn it over to Paul, but we have, just to start off, we had a new student leadership. I don't want to say if it's a new student leadership curriculum, but we did do some things that enhanced it a little bit, and we have two people here to present, and I'll let Paul do the introductions because I know he has a more formal introduction than I do. Paul.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. As you did mention, we did charge our student leadership teachers with the task of revising and revamping the curriculum. As you will well recall, we had substantial discussion during the budget process last year about this particular course offering. looking at really the notion of what the course is all about and the blend of the leadership training with some of the activities, service-type activities. Specifically, this summer, I had brought in our student leadership teachers from Sachem East and from Sachem North to really work on this notion of bringing the curriculum together, shifting the notion of a seminar into a true graded elective, and really looking at what leadership skills were being taught and making sure that both of our buildings had similar similar activities as well as similar curriculum. So at this time, I'm delighted to introduce our student leadership teachers from Sachem East, Kate Long and Bill Kropp, from Sachem North, Alex Young, and they will also be joined by a Sachem East student this evening who's a participant in the program, Sam Palaccio.
Thank you for being here tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening. I am Kate Long, and I'm accompanied by the other leadership teachers, Bill Kropp and Alex Young. Richie O'Brien could not be here this evening due to family obligations. We were pleased that you asked us to come to speak about this program because it is a program that we feel very strongly about and that we are very proud of. It was a program that was started 15 years ago when Sachem was way ahead of the educational curve, implementing a course that was student-centered rather than the traditional setting of a teacher just standing and giving lessons to the students. And it's focused on developing our students into active and engaged leaders in their schools and their community. The class has done more than simply teach our students about leadership. It has provided an avenue for them to be leaders. It has fostered a sense of community, respect, and pride amongst our students that has spread throughout our schools and the Sachem community at large. It is a program that exemplifies Sachem and the idea that we are all a part of a proud part of the Sachem family. I myself am a Sachem grad and also a product of the student leadership program, so it's something that I, coming back to teach, am very happy to be a part of. Over the summer, we were asked to look at the curriculum and to recenter what it was about, and really what we ended up doing was taking a lot of the core themes and lessons that had evolved from the onset of the course 15 years ago, and over the years have taken on kind of its own, it has evolved into such a huge thing that so many students were a part of. And then given the new set of parameters to us from the district, what we came up with was, first, we've made the transition to a numerical grading system instead of the previous pass-fail system, which does more to provide for more student accountability and uniformity. Then the second step was the change from a seminar to a course has limited the students to taking it only once, and with that we had to really scale down the scope and sequence of the curriculum and really kind of single out what we thought was the most important aspects of what had been there before. And has been streamlined into 1 year. And I believe you've gotten copies of the curriculum that we, focused on, what is leadership, and not just only looking at themselves and who they are as individuals, but examining historical leaders, current leaders, and then also implementing things like organization skills, planning skills, working together in teams and groups, and a lot of the things that we do outside of school that's, becomes part of it is the community service aspect of it and the school service aspect, which is the part that the kids really get excited about. And it's the steps that in class they are taught is what builds up to that kind of that grand finale and that big, the big things that they do, which if you, the many organizations that have benefited from it, the schools themselves, the kids, their attitudes about school and being part of a bigger picture. In the classroom, we focused on leadership styles, characteristics, as well as helping our students develop skills such as their public speaking skills, their decision making, organization and planning, goal setting and communication. All of that is enhanced by their involvement in the schools and in the community. Then, with that all being said, it's really, we've done what we can to make it where the students are still driving the course. We don't want to make it so that it's us just giving lessons. We want to keep it in the respect that they are being active and engaged, and that they are becoming, it's something that they will take with them for the rest of their lives. I, being a graduate, I know it's something that it is a strong foundation. I personally can attest to it. Samantha also volunteered to speak to kind of give the student perspective of it. Also, let me do it with that other sheet. Just a few other things were that, you know, not only is it the students themselves that are benefiting, but other school organizations, as well as, you know, things like the Thanksgiving food drive. Some people see it as, you know, originally we were being, it was asked, you know, well, is that all you're doing? Is that it just a club? It's a big work in progress where the kids are developing the ways they formulate teams, they come together, and they make the plans, they organize it, and in the end, they see that they can actually do something and that they can make a difference. So it's like a huge project that they're all a part of. You know, other organizations that have benefited, there's a few listed on here. It's driven by the students, what the activities that they want to focus on, and they devote their time, and we keep the grading, even transferring to the numerical grading system. What we've done is, in the transition, trying to keep it as flexible so that to accommodate all of the students that they can incorporate it into their schedules. The other things that we've added this year, we did get more, the district did buy more books for us to use. That's something we hadn't had in the past, that bought numerous books from sports leaders, business leaders, to just books on leadership, that now we can use that to incorporate as part of our curriculum. We've also, you know, more guest speakers and the use of different periodicals. At this point, I'm just going to pass it over to Samantha so you can get a student perspective on it.
Hi. Albert Einstein once said that one should guard against preaching to young people success in the customary form as the main aim in life. The most important motive for work in school and in life is pleasure in work, pleasure in its result, and the knowledge of the value of the result to community. And while his grammar might have been a little off, he definitely revealed the epidemic that has plagued the majority of our student body. Students come to school because they have to. School itself has become more like a chore than an enjoyable opportunity. Kids walk in the morning and leave in the afternoon unchanged, with the exception of additional homework. But school should be and could be so much more. This effect is due to students' lack of enjoyment and pride in their school. Unfortunately, the majority of students don't feel that in our district. Oftentimes, these students succumb to peer pressure and possibly make life-threatening decisions simply due to lack of belonging and ownership of their school. It's human nature to desire group unity, and however, it is the school's responsibility to ensure that this desire is not filled with negative means. In my 4 years of high school, I have found that one particular class affords students the opportunity to be part of something bigger than themselves. Student leadership has been a forerunner in the battle for our students. Leadership connects students to their community and alleviates the hoodlum stigmatism that many community members may have. The image of over 500 boxes of food collected from needy families tends to leave a fairly significant and positive impression. Yet triumphs like that also bring the student body together as a whole. Student leadership connects students to one another and to the school itself. At the sight of such a great accomplishment, students can together enjoy the fruits of their actions. Even small events like March Madness or dressing up for School Spirit Week help give students a sense of ownership and responsibility. SACHM is no longer a mere annoyance, but rather something that they can be proud of. Yet year after year, leadership students and, if you've walked the halls of either of the high schools, it is obvious to say that uniting all of these individuals is quite a job. Yet year after year, leadership students and teachers have spread a common message that the school can be enjoyable and everyone can be a part of something bigger than themselves. Without their enrollment in student leadership, many students would have enjoyed their satisfaction in making a difference. In leadership, opportunities to contribute to your community are directly presented to you and therefore allow you to participate more actively. In fact, students who aren't enrolled in leadership are also affected. Leadership offers the entire school the opportunity to participate in school activities and take ownership. Leadership also strengthens the individual. I've never been the most outgoing person. In fact, most of the time I sit quietly in the back of the class. Yet through numerous class discussions on current events and other relevant events in leadership class, I have broken that habit. In fact, because of leadership's valuable message, I'm sitting here before you tonight, despite all nervousness. Leadership has taught me to speak my mind no matter what the cost and stand up for what you believe in. Although conceptually simple, I cannot say how difficult it is to overcome this. Without the priceless teachings of leadership during my 4 years enrolled, I would probably never become the individual that I am today. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity that leadership has afforded. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said. Are there any questions from the board? Rob?
I know that leadership went through some changes over the last year. I'm not real familiar with the changes were. Is it quick? Any way of getting just the background as to Dr. Murphy, those changes that occurred?
Well, I think you could speak to Kate, Bill, or Alex because they were integral in doing some of these things.
Last year it was held as a seminar. This year it's held as a class.
Right.
How long is the class?
It's a half year, the same as it's always been. It's a half credit class. They take it every other day.
And how many students are enrolled in it?
My largest class has 34 students.
So overall, what's the enrollment?
105 sections at both schools with a minimum of 30 students in each class.
Over 30 students. Yeah. Okay. Have we considered, is there a need, or have we ever considered, you know, introducing a second year leadership course for students to continue on?
It had been originally, when we moved to the split to the two schools, it was envisioned that it would be a four-year cycle that the curriculum would be on. That way, they're not repeating in what they were taking. But due to fiscal reasons, it had to be cut down to 11th and 12th grade only. We cut out the 9th and 10th graders. And then this year, with it being that it's only going to, from this point forward now, it's a course, students can take it once and can only receive the credit for it once, and therefore we have to scale the curriculum down to just this for 1 year, for a half year course.
My only concern, I serve as an advisor for a group called Schools USA, which is formerly known as VICA. Same thing as youth organization. The reason why I ask this question is that when we had the students as 11th graders, they literally spent an entire year getting adjusted to that leadership role, participating in different types of civic activities and teaching leadership to the students. That when they come back as a senior, they really flourish and they're a completely different kid. And that's really why I'm asking these questions. You know, have we looked at maybe introducing a second year, trying to get that same effect as our students in leadership program?
We could have Paul take a look at that. You know, but I'd like to share some of the backup we had from last year. We're going into this, Robin. I think I'll help give you a background to that. But that was some of the consideration we spoke with the people who put this together last year. But if we were going to do it, couldn't repeat the same type of things, because you could have kids, in essence, taking the old leadership seminar, who could hear the same topics, you know, year after year after year, because you have different teachers teaching it. So the leadership course, consistently from one class to the other, could be very different, and then from school to school it could be very different. So we wanted to make sure that the scope and sequence of at least this course was going to be consistent from class to class and from school to school, because people did it their own way and they saw it evolve over years doing it their own way, and you had different teachers doing it. You had John Heslin teaching in the past, you have Gary Comstock teaching in the past, now Bill, Alex, Kate, and Rich O'Brien have been doing it for, I think, 2 or 3 years now, but it's just changed so much. So if we're going to do something like that, the sequence going to the next year has to be very, very consistent, so that we're not repeating the same concepts over and over.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the board? Douglas?
I just wanted to say I thought it was a great presentation. I know it's changed since I was in leadership, but how does one get into leadership now? When I got into leadership when I was going into sophomore year, I had to get a few letters of recommendation from a teacher to get in. What's the process now to get in?
Ed, you had a question.
I'm actually just going to build a little bit on what Mr. Young just said. A few years ago, I had the privilege of having Mr. Kropp as a student leadership teacher in ninth grade, and now Mr. Young this year as a senior. And I can definitely attest to the fact that it's a very different experience, because as a ninth grader, you come in, you kind of feed off of the energy of the upperclassmen. You're a little bit, not as involved as the upperclassmen, because they kind of teach you and bring you along. And now as a senior, I find it very, very empowering to be able to do the same thing to the younger classmen. In this case, it's only the juniors, because it's only open for juniors and seniors. But I feel that it's very integral and very important to have that feedback and have that input from the upperclassmen. Very helpful.
Thank you, Ed. Anyone else have a question? John?
Ed, two quick questions. I see we have the curriculum for Sachem East. Now, this is going to be the same curriculum and grading system for North also?
Alex is a Sachem North teacher. Bill and Kate are Sachem East teachers. And Rich O'Brien, who couldn't make it tonight, is a Sachem North teacher. So it's consistency. That was one of the goals, is try to create some consistency through both schools.
We worked on it too. This is the curriculum we worked on together.
Okay, and then my other question, I missed the answer to Doug's question about how a student gains entrance into the leadership.
Any other questions? Ed, you want to comment again? Don't you have something else?
Just to make a comment on that question as to get into leadership. Last year, when I had to sign up for the class, I did end up having to get a recommendation that you all got. I don't know if that helps at all.
Deborah, did you have a comment also?
Okay. I didn't realize it would have had to been scaled down this much, so I'm a little disappointed. However, I would really like to help create that second year. If we could put that on a future agenda, that would be great. And if you could maybe start doing some brainstorming and come back to us and give us an overall view of, you know, what you feel it'll look like. That.
Well, Deborah, I'll do that if that's the board direction to me. I'll speak to them about that.
Okay, thank you.
Douglas, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to conclude by saying I think you guys are doing a great job. I like the changes that were made. And I noticed you said in your presentation, public speaking, and I just can't stress this enough. I'm in college now. I'm a sophomore at St. Joseph's. And in one of my classes, I'll try to make this a short story, I'm in a local government class, and our final exam is to have a debate where we're going to be squared off as if I'm running for governor against Tony, and it's a whole format that has to be done. And the last two classes, while we've learned some things, it's been the majority of the class trying to weasel out of this because they don't know how to speak in public. And I just can't tell you how many people my age I know that can't speak in public, and it is a skill that is a bit acquired, but it's something you can work at. And, you know, I like the direction you're going with that. And as much public speaking as you can teach would be better, because, you know, this generation, my generation, and the kids younger than me, we need to learn how to speak better than publicly. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from anyone? Thank you, folks. Thanks for your time tonight. Reading recovery. Do we have the power? I saw Bill McIntosh come into the rescue here.
Well, initially, I wanted to thank the board for officially appointing Bill tonight as the webmaster, because he walked right in and solved all of our technological problems. This evening, Maria Casamassa is with us, who's going to be talking about the Elementary Reading Recovery Program. It's kind of an interesting follow-up to the discussion we had at last week's board meeting and the upcoming one we have next time related to academic intervention. The Reading Recovery is really a preventive program, so to speak. It's a program for first graders that have been targeted as possibly being in deficiencies with literacy and language arts. Maria is a teacher over at Gatelot working with the Reading Recovery Program. She's also our lead Reading Recovery teacher and works through BOCES as a program specialist there. Maria?
Okay, and the first part. The first prevention, obviously, is good classroom teaching. And we are devising a plan in station. We have a new program in the pre-K to 2 areas. We have new books, and we really are focusing on writing workshops, focusing on a balanced literacy program. And that is really good, but there will be some children.
Yeah, right on the keyboard, you could use those. I think if you put on the Yankee hat, it'll work better, too.
No, I'm in a depression because of the Yankee.
Bill, you left your Yankee hat. Some fan you are.
Okay. So what Reading Recovery is there are going to be children who are not able to succeed based on the, they really need extra help. They're confused in the classroom. They need extra help. So Reading Recovery is part of the secondary prevention, which is a successful second chance or identification of need for long-term help. And then if kids are not able to succeed in the Reading Recovery Program, then we have longer-term support, which deals with further assessment by specialists, continuing assistance over time. The goal of Reading Recovery is to dramatically reduce the number of learners who have extreme difficulty with literacy learning and the cost of these learners to educational systems.
The way we select children, it is for first grade children who have been identified as needing additional literacy support. Each child meets with the reading recovery teacher for 30 minutes each day for an average of 12 to 20 weeks. And what reading recovery is, because it is a short-term program, the progress that we're looking for is an accelerative kind of progress. During this intervention, and I'll show you as we get on later, the different texts that children read, and you'll see how they are making accelerated progress during this time. Once they make this accelerated progress, they are able to continue to work on their own in an average group setting in a regular classroom. Because before this, the kids were really not able to benefit from the good classroom instruction. And why reading recovery works, the key to success really is the ongoing literacy professional development of reading recovery teachers. And we teach the lowest achieving first graders. We share knowledge of early literacy in schools by working alongside principals, teachers, and parents to strengthen literacy learning in schools. And what we do is we have continuing contact with professional development where we watch other teachers teach and we talk about that teaching and we really kind of problem solve as to what the best way is to teach these children who are having difficulty acquiring literacy. We also work with principals and the classroom teachers. It's really a community of learning. We don't feel that the kids that we work with are just our children. They belong to the whole school. They belong to everyone, and we work to emphasize that. We have an effective accountability system. Teaching is data-driven. We collect data on our children each and every day that we work with them. We have running records. We have different assessments that we use, and based on that assessment, we determine how to teach these children. Because these children at this point really need more of an individualized instruction than what they are able to receive in the classroom. In addition to that, at the end of the year and at the end of their program, data is collected on every child for monitoring and evaluation. We have data on every single child that we teach. The data then is collected, sent to a national evaluation center, and that data is then sent back to us. So at the end of every year, we have a report which tells us how every child in the program did, how the district as a whole did, and how each individual school did. We also, in addition to that, we at SACHM, in the middle of a school year, collect data on the children who have already had reading recovery. So we want to know how the children who, when they were in first grade, are doing now in second, third, and fourth grade. And I'll talk about that later. I have some numbers on that. And the success rate for reading recovery as a whole is that 59% of all the students who receive this service can read or write within the average range of their class. And people might be saying, well, we're 59%. But you have to realize, I'm not a statistics person, but I do know a little bit about a bell curve. And we're talking about the children who are at the lower end of the bell curve. So they're not exactly going to fit into that normal curve. And this is just a student that I worked with last year. As the presentation goes on, I'll tell you the big numbers. But this is really the story behind the numbers. We worked with children, and if you look at where this child came in, she came in at a text level 0. And then when she left the program, she was reading at a text level 20. And as in a few more slides, I'll show you what that really means in as far as what that text is. Her writing vocabulary. When she came into the program, she was able to write 2 words. When she left, she was able to write 53. That's within a 10-minute period. Her dictation, which means we would read her a sentence and she would determine how she was able to hear the sounds and then record them. In the beginning, her score was a 12, at the end, it was a 36. Letter identification went from 49 to 53, and that really is a reflection of our full-day kindergarten. Because when I first began this program, we would get children in the program who really didn't know many of their letters, but that really has increased since we have full-day kindergarten. The Ohio word test, the child was not able to read any of the words, and at the end of the program, she was able to read 18. Concepts about print is really book handling skills, having children know about print and how words work. And when the child came into the program, she scored a 10, and at the end, she scored a 20. And this is just an example. When I say a child read a level 0, she was not even able to read this level, which is a level 1. And this is a level 1 book. By the end of her, by the middle of her program, she was reading about a level 14, which you can see there's a big difference. So
this is really definitely an accelerated program where the children really learn to read. And at the end of the school year, she was able to read this, a book that looked like this, and just to give you a visual idea of what that child was able to do. Okay, and these are the big numbers. That was the story behind the numbers, and these are the big numbers. At the end of the school year last year, of the children who received reading recovery, 65% of them were reading at text level 14 and above, which is about the end of grade 1, early grade 2 level. Okay, and then what we did in the middle of last year is we looked at the second graders who had received reading recovery the year before, and you have to remember that all of these children were mandated to receive academic intervention services. They were the lowest achieving first graders. In the middle of second grade, after receiving reading recovery, 77% of them were reading at what would be considered at or above grade level, and 23% were not. Okay, and then now we're talking about the academic intervention services. So what we did, as we said, is we kept track of the children who received reading recovery. Last year, the third graders who had received reading recovery when they were in first grade, only 73% of them were really in need of academic intervention services. Now you have to remember that the children that we pick up, 100% of them are really in need of academic. They are mandated to receive academic intervention services. But by the end of third grade, and this is based on their current OTA score, so it's based on standardized tests, only 72% of them, only 28% of them really needed those services. And then we did the same thing for the fourth and the fifth grade. The fourth grade was based on state ELA, and of those children, only 19% needed required academic intervention services, and 81% did not. And for the fifth grade, it was 88% did not require academic intervention services, and 12% did. So we really feel that reading recovery is part of, as we said, that comprehensive plan for literacy. Good classroom teaching is the first. But not all children can benefit from good classroom teaching without some kind of individualized attention, individualized instruction.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the board? Can we have the lights, please? Rob?
Maria, you mentioned that students that are not reading at a certain level meet with a reading recovery teacher. What is it, a one-on-one? It's always a one-on-one. The other thing I have to say is I think between the reading recovery and the hardcore reading program, I think this district is doing an excellent job in producing young readers. I do have to say that. And the only reason why I said it is that I might have a son at the first grade, and it's just tremendous the programs are in place. I'm just bothered when it comes home from school and starts reading at the level he does. So I think you guys are going to do a great job.
Thank you, Rob. Tony?
Yeah, Tony, how important do you feel? I realize when you get the students, they're at a certain level. Mm-hmm. Overall, and I know it's hit and miss, each child is different. How important is reading at home? And do we give them enough opportunity? Meaning teachers give them reading assignments, enough reading at home to you know, just coming into school and reading is one thing. And that may not be enough. And, reading is so important at home. Do we give enough homework of reading? Do you find that there's a lack there, or is it enough there?
I believe, I know in our program, the children have to read books every night, and they go home with a writing assignment. We also invite the parents to come in and watch a lesson, so they actually know what we're doing in school. And we just do the reading recovery part, but we really want the reading at home to be an enjoyable experience. So they have to read every night, and I feel like based on what we do give them enough, because that's also in addition to what they receive in the classroom. So, and it really is, like when you're talking about reading with kids at home, you don't want it to be, it is homework, but you don't want it to be homework. You want it to be something that they're going to enjoy to do. Doing for the rest of their lives, because if they think of it as just something they do in school, we want to develop lifelong readers and writers, so we want it to be something that they enjoy doing. So you have your homework, but you also want to encourage the parents to read with the kids and I know that in many of the schools I've been in, we have like reading nights and all kinds of things that really encourage that parent-school connection where the kids and the parents are really reading together and doing literacy together as an enjoyable thing. That's something that the kids will want to do for the rest of their life.
Anyone else? Fred?
Well, thank you for the presentation. Very nice. I'd just like to know, how many students are we talking about, percentage-wise, that are in the reading recovery program? You know, is there a certain amount, or it depends on just each grade?
The thing with reading recovery is they say about, in an average school, about 20% of the kids really need these services. Mm-hmm. So depending on the population of the first grade, obviously you've got 100 kids in the first grade classroom, then 20 of those kids would need, you know, the services. So it's really depending on your population and really what kids are really struggling. So it's about, you say about 20%.
Yeah, we have enough manpower.
We get about 16 kids in each first grade school who get reader recovery each year.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Doug.
Thank you for the great presentation. During the presentation, you said that kids are selected based on their Terra Nova scores, and that's how they're identified, or did I misunderstand?
No, I probably didn't make that clear. In the first grade, we give them an assessment that's based on the text level. It's an informal assessment of text level, the hearing and recording sounds and words. It's that assessment. And then what we do is we follow those kids to second, third, fourth grade, and we look at their Terra Nova scores to determine whether that progress that they made in first grade has been continued to second, third, and fourth grade.
Thank you.
Maria, would you, I'm sorry, who else is up? Deborah?
The ESL population, are they in this particular reading recovery?
Yes, they are. Yes, as a matter of fact, the child whose scores were up there was the ESL.
And how are they faring?
Before we take them into the program, we kind of determine where their language is. And in the assessment that we give, we can determine if they understand the directions, if they're able to do that assessment, we will take them into the program. So it really depends. We don't take them if they really are not understanding the language. But if they are, we certainly do. And actually, a lot of research has shown that they do very well. And as I said, that the scores that I had up there weren't really so high.
Do you know the percentage of the ESL students
that receive reading recovery? No, I do not know.
We can figure that out, Deborah. It's probably not a great percentage, but we can figure that out.
Because they're really, we take first graders, and sometimes at that time they're not able to understand. But we do take, you know, and depending on the school, too. You know, certain schools in our district have a higher ESL population.
Thank you, Maria.
Anyone else? Maria, could you just speak briefly again about the articulation between the reading teachers, the reading recovery teachers, and the classroom teacher?
I really think that's a big part of the program because what we want to do is we want to make sure that the kids are receiving instruction in the classroom as well as instruction from us. So what we do is we see the teachers every day when we pick up the kids, and then in some schools, they actually, what they do is they have a piece of paper that goes back and forth that shows, you know, this child is reading on this text level for me, where is that child reading on that text level for you. We also encourage the teachers, we go into the classroom to look at the children, and we encourage the classroom teachers to come and watch us so that we know that we're on the same page as far as the education, the literacy of this child. There really is a lot of communication. In the school that I'm in now, it's really awesome. We have actually a team, a reading recovery team, and we meet a few times a year. We talk about the kids. We talk about the progress that the kids have been making and maybe what kids, you know, we might be picking up for the next round. So it really forces a lot of communication as far as working together as a team. It works with the community, I think, of the school, the culture of the school, and it helps them.
Yes. Who was first? Doug and then Tony. I'm sorry.
Maria, you mentioned team, the team concept in the school, present school. Is that something that that you encourage or you would pass on to your people that encourage throughout all the schools?
Yes, I do. I meet with the teachers, the trained teachers, about six times a year, and we've discussed that. I've done actually presentations at BOCES for principals where I've discussed the idea of having a team. I think that's an important part of the communication. And not all the schools have it, and it's really a matter of the administrators and the teachers working together. It's not easy to implement. It does take time and it takes effort. But in schools that have teams, I think there is a big difference as far as, you know, what's happening with the implementation of the program.
Is it a financial thing? It's not.
Not at all. But it is a commitment, a time commitment on the part of the teachers.
Well, that's good, but you know, we certainly want it, you know, the equality in all the schools, and if teaming is best, you find it best, we'd certainly would like to see it in all the schools. So I would encourage that we try to do that if we can. Thank you.
Douglas, did you have a question?
Yeah, Tony got the last part of what I wanted to say. I'd like to see it.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's twice tonight now.
Yeah, you've been stepping on his toes a lot, Tony. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to see if that's something that we can help facilitate at all these schools. If these reading recovery teams, she would know best. If you're saying these are what's best for each school, then certainly every school should have a team on it. And anything we can do to help facilitate that.
Right, we'd bring that back to the principals and see if, you know, that's part of their vision for their schools. Because every school handles things a little bit differently. And as Maria said, it may be work, and there could be a different direction that those schools are going in. But I wrote that down, and I'll talk to Jill and then the principals.
Thank you.
One other thing, Maria, communicating with parents, you folks do that directly.
Yes, we do.
And I don't recall on the report cards whether, is there an area if a youngster is in reading recovery, is there a checkoff area on the report cards? Do you remember that?
No, there isn't.
There isn't. Okay.
On
their record card? Is that how it goes from year to year? Okay.
Right. Well, the record card actually has the reading recovery.
And how often do you contact parents?
It really depends on the individual teacher. I try to, write notes home to the teachers, and then I'll call to the parents if need be, and then I'll call. But like I said, we meet with the parents in the beginning of the program. We show them exactly what it means, and then we encourage them to come in and watch. So it's really, I can't really say there's like a definite number, but it really depends, you know, on the child and the parents. And
you said there are opportunities for parents to come in.
Yes.
So they can help at home, and that's a great concept.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. And then we encourage them to come in and watch lessons, which is very, very powerful, because they really know what's going on with their children. They know how to help the children at home. That's a big, I think, a very powerful part.
Terrific, Maria. Thank you. Anyone else before I say goodnight to Maria? Thank you, Maria. What do we have? Bleachers.
Well, Bruce, why don't you and Mike sit up front, and this way we can possibly answer some questions to the board. We sent the board late notice from Dependable Inspection. I don't believe Dependable is here tonight, and Bruce wasn't sure if they were going to show, but we faxed and sent you information regarding what Dependable's recommendations for the bleachers are based on their inspection of the areas. And Bruce and Mike, you can give the board and the public a better idea of what we're looking at.
Mike, you've been doing it. We've had a couple of problems with the bleachers. We all know that the boards are breaking. They're old. Okay. They better? Okay. The things are breaking there. The wood's rotten in some spots. And to replace one or two pieces at a time is ridiculous. So I spoke to the person that inspects the bleachers, and I asked him if we replaced the entire bleachers, all the wood on it, with just more, you know, the same type of wood, but, you know, fresh treated and newer, I don't even know how old that wood is, would the structure hold it? And he came back and told me that there are six posts that support the press box, and that they're box steel, they're not angle iron. Because of that, the bottom was welded to a plate, and the top was open, and over the years rain got in there and rusted through. There were actually holes for some of those six spots. He told us to bolt angle iron for that. We did. Just the way he spec'd it out. That's only to the rotted beams that are there are only supporting the angle, the new angle is supporting the weight. And because we did that, he came back and checked it last Friday. He said that we could replace the wood and that it would probably be good for another 2 or 3 years, is what he said. And I assume that if we're going to replace the bleachers eventually, best bet would be to replace the wood now rather than risk a lawsuit or something else. We've already had 2 instances this year where the planks broke.
Well, let's just be clear, Mike and Bruce, when you're talking about the bleachers and the support system, Dependable said, how long do we have for these metal support stanchions that we have presently over there?
I told him that we were hoping to get new bleachers there and possibly in 2 or 3 years. And he said if we did the repairs, it would last that long. He saw no problem with it. What he mentioned in his letter is that the box beams I spoke about were the only beams in the entire bleachers that are not galvanized. And that's why they rusted out so fast. The other ones, they're starting to show some rust around where bolts are here and there. But my thought was while we put the wood on the bleachers, we could also, touch up any rust we see with some Rust-Oleum paint or whatever. Get another year or 2 or 3 out of it, in addition to the 2 years he's talking about. So, some reason we can't get the money in the next 2 or 3 years, I think we could go a little longer.
Okay. There's questions. John?
Mike.
Who else is it? Deborah, you have a question too? All right, John first, then Deborah.
Mike, I'm reading this letter, and to me, he's certifying that the bleachers are safe, correct? So
that's what he's saying. He said for 2 seasons. My feeling is that we don't count this season because we didn't do the work. I guess it's another 2 years after.
Correct. So as long as we'd replace the wood, there'd be no safety issue with the bleachers from the way I read this letter. I mean, is that
correct? Visually, there will be. It still slopes on the south end. The last 2 years, I believe, kind of sunk in. They settled over the years, but there'll still be that little bump. But structurally, he said it's fine.
And what was the cost to replace the wood?
I figured originally between $16,000 and $20,000. I think, and that's with the hardware and everything else we may need. I just heard on the news yesterday that because the housing starts slowing down, that the wood's getting cheaper, so we might get a break on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Deborah, you're next.
I guess just like the law, it's open to interpretation, but I'm not reading it the same way John is. I mean, these gentlemen basically recommended that we replace these bleachers within 2 years due to the fact that the galvanized is rusting from the inside out. And it's going to continue to rust. It's not going to stop. So I don't know if we want to invest the $20,000 now or, if we should start discussing getting them replaced by next year. With the state funds that are coming down.
Rob?
Like you said that the only thing that's rusting is the galvanized beams and the press box that he felt was an issue.
The supports that hold the press box were the only ones where there were actually visual rust that actually eroded the material. That's where the box beams were under. There were 6 of them underneath the press box.
But as far as the rest of the structure, the galvanized structure where the beams and walkways are, what were the conditions of those besides?
You can see rust spots on it, but it's not rust. It's not flaking or anything like that. You can see where the bolts are, and when you drill a hole for a bolt, that's not galvanized anymore. So you can see, rust water coming out like water, rusty stains. But as far as structural, that hasn't changed yet.
Okay, so what are the possibilities of replacing? Because eventually, when I understand, that's going to become a visitor side. Is that what the plan is? Is that going to become the visitor side? So going to some of the football games and looking at the visitor section, you only look at, other than the Sachem Northeast game, you can count the visitors usually on 2 hands. It's not going to be handled in the same way as it is today. So if we were to replace the galvanized beams for the press box, okay, that would remedy that problem.
Those beams haven't been replaced. They've been reinforced. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
But he's saying is that they were rushing through, and that poses an issue. This particular company.
He's talking about the entire structure. He said it's possible to start busting through in the next 2 years or so.
So basically, in essence, I mean, this is, let's just get to the chase. In essence, that system has 2 to 3 years of life left in it before we have to say, hey, they're not able to use this structure anymore. It's either shut it down or replace it. Is that the crux of the situation?
That's good, except that the structure will last 2 or 3 years, maybe more.
Right.
The wood that's on there now is...
That's a problem. I mean... Yeah. Rob was at the football game when I was there, and Tony was standing right there in the hole, and we saw those problems. So if we did do something and it did get on the capital project, it's the time you do the capital project and it gets approved and all these other things, it could be the 2008-2009 school year. What Mike is proposing is for $16,000, $20,000, we replace the wood now, because next season it is more. We're not going to replace that because the time you get voter approval, the 2007-2008 school year is going on. They're not going to get that corrected then. For $16,000, $20,000, at least you have sound wood stands for next season and whatever other events go on in the football field, because it's not just football that goes on in those fields. And we know from the fireworks night that's when one of the damages happened at night, when somebody broke through on one of the planks. And it's dangerous. It is dangerous. So no matter what people want to say, the stone throwers say it's not real. It's real. You know, I've seen it with my eyes. I felt the wood in those areas. What happens, and Mike, you could probably explain it a lot better than I do, is that they painted over this wood over the years. Water gets in, and you can't tell if this is rotted wood or not. And you could walk on it a little bit, and then 10 minutes later, you could walk on it again, and then it could collapse. And we've seen that case after case, that it looks solid, you jump up and down, that's fine. 10 minutes later, somebody jumps up and down on it, and it collapses. So it's a problem, and it's dangerous, if not corrected.
Mike, have we considered replacing, instead of using wood, using metal? Can we do that, or is that a problem?
Again, we're dealing with the structure that this person says is only going to be a few years. Up 2 or 3 years.
Is metal a lot more expensive?
Much, much more expensive.
Much more. Yeah. Okay.
One other question. If we replace this with wood, are we able to use persecuted wood? Is there any laws regarding that?
I have to find out what CCA. I don't know if we can use that anymore, but there's other treated wood that we use now, and I have to see how I can get that. I might just be better off getting pine. Putting some sort of a seal on the end of it or something. I haven't looked into it that far yet. Just trying to find it out. Up until Friday, I didn't even know if we could replace it.
Doug?
Mike, are they saying we have to replace all the wood now before it's safe again that they can use, or we can just keep patchworking it? I mean, I'm reading it this way, and it's the kind of conclusion I came to.
I didn't ask him if it would be safe if we replace the wood now. What I asked them is that if we replace the wood, would the structure hold up as long as the wood would hold up? And he said yes. Because in my mind, we have to replace the wood now. There's no way for us to tell, other than the wood we've already replaced, there's no way for us to tell what's rotten and what's not. You can't do it visually, because it's been painted black. So you can't see any cracks. It's wet. It's water saturated. And the fact that it's painted black, you get a day In November, that's, might be 35 degrees out with the sun on there, that wood is warm. So whatever critters are in there eating away, they activate when it gets warm like that. They could do that every day, halfway through the winter.
Mike, when you got the number of 16 to 18,000, what kind of wood were we talking about?
I'm talking about 7,500, approximately 7,500 lineal feet.
Of what kind of wood, though?
2 by 10s.
Are we talking, what type of material? Is it pine, cedar?
Well, I was thinking of a pressure-treated type of wood.
Pressure-treated?
Yes.
And you're going to check that out and let us know what we can use or can't use as far as pressure-treated wood is concerned.
Right. I know that you can't use a wood with arsenicide in it for a playground, but I'm not sure about if you can use it. I'd have to find out.
How long a period of time would this take to do?
if we did the replacement. Suppose we would have to wait for the season to end, no doubt.
I would say the season would end and that we would get started until we couldn't work anymore and then finish it by the spring. One, it's just clear, it's straight pieces. You just pull one out. The only difficulty is you have to drill each piece to bolt it to the metal. So they already have a system down, maintenance guys, that they put it, they lay it down, mark it, flip it over, drill it, and put it back down and put the carriage bolts through it.
Someone else had a question, Tony, and then John.
I don't know how many home games we have left. I think there's maybe two left for football. But we don't use just that stadium for football. I think there is there, and I don't know if we continue across. And then, so my concern is when you say you're going to replace it after the season, you're talking after the football season, I'm assuming.
Technically, we could get started because we wouldn't rip it all off and then replace it. We would replace sections. That, you know, my guess is we would start the first row first. Yeah. That's 2x12s. Do the whole length and then go up to the next row, just one right after the other. We could do it, you know, in stages. If you have a game Saturday, we could work Friday and then not work on Saturday.
I think North is away Saturday. I think we're away. Right. Isn't it at East?
Okay. It's at home.
It's at home. Okay. Well, first of all, I agree that it has to be changed. It has to be changed right away because it's not safe in some places. We don't know where it's safe or not. My concern is the future of that bleachers. As I remember, maybe three, and Bruce can probably remember better, the cost of removing that foundation and that metal structure was somewhere around $100,000, if not more. And that was 4 years ago. Okay, so now I'm assuming... I don't think it's going to go down. It's going to go up, the cost. So now we're going to wait another 2 years, and I'm sure that cost is going to go up again. And I'm not going to guess what it's going to be, but it's going to be much more money. So I think it has to be changed as soon as we can change it. And I agree with Deborah that this has to be done again, maybe with the money coming up. And I agree with Dr. Beerworth putting it up. I'm sorry.
Dr. Beerworth. Murphy,
that putting it on.
You better talk loud if you want to agree with him.
That's how far. That's the last time we had it looked at. It was like, when we get that done, even if we approve it, it's not going to get done till next year anyway, because we have a short period of time between budget approval and then the summer to get that torn up. As we know how contractors work, we're lucky if we have it ready for the fall. So my concern would be to get it done as soon as possible, and I'd like to know again from Dr. Murphy. When he gets these numbers, when we can get this done as soon as possible. My opinion that it has to be done. We keep waiting, and we keep pushing this off, and in 2 years we don't know what the financial situation this district is going to be in, and then it may be a problem, and then we're going to have to put it off again, and we can't keep putting off problems, as we saw with the Winona roof. We put it off, and again we had an emergency situation. So, again, I'm in favor of replacing the wood as soon as possible, but I certainly would like to look at replacing that structure as soon as possible.
The jump that we could do, the board can authorize the architects, like the November, December board meeting, to do their specs and plans. So if it's approved in May, we could then send it up to SED the very next day, and we could shorten that period instead of waiting 6 months after May for them to do the specs and plans. Now, the downside is if it's defeated, we're still going to owe the architects their percentage for doing the job. But that's the only way that we could get a leg up on the timing, authorizing architects to stop working.
You're talking about structural, the whole structure.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. Well, I think. Excuse me, Mike. I think, again, that was my opinion, and I think I heard Deborah. I don't know how the whole board feels about it. I guess maybe that needs another discussion. But my personal opinion is that I don't want to wait 2 years, again, to go start this process, because that's going to be 3 or 4 years down the road before this is done. And I guarantee you we'll be replacing the wood again before we replace the structure. So, again, I would like to get it on. If it needs another discussion, let's put it on an agenda, get it done, and get it done as soon as possible. And I apologize, Dr. Murphy, for using the wrong superintendent.
Jack is in where the heck is Herrick's? And they have real good bleachers there, Tony, from what I understand.
If you travel around this Long Island, every district I've been to has better bleachers than our North old bleachers. Believe me, where in back in the 1800s with that bleach, those bleachers.
John?
Two questions. First one, just so I can understand. For approximately $20,000, if we replace the wood, we'll have bleachers that are acceptable for 2 years that have no safety concerns, correct? Okay, second question, Bruce. Since apparently this letter doesn't state any major safety concerns, if we do replace these bleachers, are they covered by state aid?
No, that type of maintenance is not covered by state aid. The community would have to authorize a project, which the architects would have to certify. Replacing wood is not a state-aided project.
No, I'm talking about replacing the bleachers as a whole. Would we get any state aid on it if we decided to go that way?
The bleachers as a standalone project would not be. If it's tied into construction with the building itself, then it could be. It has to be an ancillary cost to another project. But bleacher work strictly on its own, as a single project, is not state-aidable. But I would envision on that larger bond issue, we're going to be doing work at North High School, some type of renovations. And when you tie the bleachers into those other renovations, then the bleachers do become an annual project.
Okay, so if as part of this global bond
right,
issue.
As part of the $20 million project, I'm sure North is going to require additional type of work.
They have the roof there, Bruce. We know we have the part of the section of the roof, so.
That's right. So there are ways that the architects can tie it into the building. Site work is an eligible building aid ancillary cost to the main project.
So would that mean then, since the bleachers could be aidable, the press box could be aidable?
Depending again, yeah. If we structure it as part of a larger project, no, the press boxes would. Press boxes have a separate building number, so that they are not aidable. We investigated that a few months ago. The bleachers are part of the building. The press box, because it's considered a standalone building, and there's no student-occupied space, would not be able.
Okay, but the bleachers would be.
But the bleachers would be if you tie it into construction of the rest of the building. That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Douglas.
My question is, are the bleachers safe now? Can we put people on there now without there being a safety concern? Because it says that they want us to replace all of the damaged lumber. Now, and you're saying that we don't know what the damaged lumber is because we can't tell because it's rotting from the inside out. So can we really put people on there? This is my question now. I know the structure and stuff. I understand that. But the wood itself is the problem that the wood planks are breaking. So is it safe now to put people on there is basically what I'm asking.
We're checking the bleachers every few days. We have the maintenance people. I mean, it's not much of a test. We have the people walk up there, look. You know, jump up and down if they see something, which is really a good test because if it doesn't work, it's thrilling. But and, I mean, we have no other way to check it.
We have to keep that in their contract, too, by the way, Mike.
Oh, okay.
That they have to be test bleachers and stuff. We don't want to take that out.
But to answer you, right now, I don't think they're that dangerous, but there's a much greater chance now that something could break. We saw it twice, probably in the last, I think, 3 weeks. Especially the one after the fireworks, because that wasn't reported. That was long. That was about 12 feet or so, I think, by about a foot. So, you know, if somebody came up there later on in the night and didn't know that was broken, they would have just fallen through. It's not a matter of just breaking that. It's also, you know, what happens later on if we don't know it.
All right. Tony and then John.
And Mike, you know, and I and Rob have seen it, the kids, usually adults walk up the stairs and walk through. Kids jump from the top one down each stair. That's what they do.
Right.
And that's where the problem occurs. They hit a weak piece of wood up on the top there. Somebody's really going to get hurt. And it's going to wind up to be either a kid or someone elderly when they get in there. And that's my concern. And I've been at two games, and I've seen twice the holes. And I'm just concerned that it's going to happen. We're going to have a big crowd again, probably coming up, and again, I would hope that you do a really thorough inspection. I hate to be the guy that's going to test it, but test it good so it doesn't go through.
John.
Now, is it possible if the board gives direction that the wood could be replaced before Saturday's game?
Absolutely not. No, there's no way. I don't think we could even purchase it that fast.
What the plan was, if the board gives approval, is we can do small sections every week for a time period and get most of it replaced in a fairly timely manner. So the direction we're looking for from the board right now is a go-ahead to just replace the wood planks right now, the wood part of it, and we hope to add this as part of our capital projects initiatives that we will bring out to the public in the springtime. So that's really what we need now. Because what Bruce says, and I don't want the same thing happen with the Winona roof. I mean, we know that this wood's only a temporary fix, but I don't want to get to the point where we're making promises that we're going to get these installed for before this autumn, and we're not able to deliver because of the site work that may have to happen over there, and then we're stuck with still a bleacher that's really unusable with the other wood. So just if we have this wood replaced, we can still use it for a couple of years, even if the capital project's approved, and we can get it done the right way and not just the quick way.
Okay, and let's bring this to a close, okay? Board members, the way I see it right now, we're looking to give approval for them to move ahead, replace the wood, and then what we're looking to do is to put this as part of the capital project for the spring and vote on so we can replace the entire structure. So this is a safeguard for right now. Is that correct? Okay. Can we have a Mike?
So we're approving what they're already doing and replacing more boards? All the boards. Okay.
Deborah?
What concerns me is that the last two home games, people have gone through four boards. We have a home game coming up again on Saturday. I feel very insecure about the stability of those floorboards. And I know the one hole I could fit through. I know I'm small, but I mean, if a child falls from the top of those bleachers, we're in deep trouble.
What do you suggest we do, Deborah, at this point?
You know, I think we should close them. I said it weeks ago. We should have closed those darn things down.
That's why we have them inspected, and we're continuing the inspections, but we hope to continue to replace the wood.
But, Charlie, we've been inspecting them, and people are still going through the floorboards. You know, we inspect it one minute, and then the next minute, somebody's going through them.
Right.
I don't know what the answer is.
Let's go around the table and see what we want to do. If we're going to give Mike the go-ahead to replace the boards, and then let's get this on the capital projects. Ed, what do you think? Replace it? Jump in here, Ed.
It's definitely a danger as it is right now, so I would say replace it as soon as possible.
Rob?
Yeah, we replace the wood immediately and let's pursue the bleachers.
Dave? Deborah? Fred?
Mike?
Mike, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Go ahead, guys. Thank you very much. We have one visitor, Laura Slattery. Is that right, Laura? Thanks for waiting, Laura.
That's okay. I'll just take 2 minutes. I wasn't planning on speaking. It's about reading recovery. My son wasn't in reading recovery. He's a delayed reader. He's been delayed since kindergarten. He did Wilson. He's now in fifth grade. He's still delayed. And as Dr. Murphy knows, he no longer gets one-on-one. His teacher took a three-hour training course in Wilson, so this way she can do Wilson in the class. It's October 17th. They haven't started doing Wilson in the class yet. There's been no reading done since school has started. They are going to be breaking into groups soon, I'm told. But in the meantime, what I had sent to Dr. Murphy last year is exactly what you said. It's very important for reading teachers to work as a team with the teachers in the classroom who really aren't reading teachers to develop reading in children. And now my son's in fifth grade. He's still delayed. he's at the bottom of your 59% bell curve. So now it's October 17th. He still has not had reading in the classroom. No reading books have come home. We do do reading every night. You know, he reads to us and he writes a note to his teachers about what he's read about or whatever. But his progress is definitely slow, and it's even slower now that he is not working with a reading teacher. And there are still students. He goes to Gate Lot. So I know there are students who go to Resource that are still meeting with a reading teacher because my son is special ed, and so therefore he's in a smaller class. It was determined that his teacher could do the Wilson with the smaller class in the classroom. I compared the IEPs of other students who are still going to reading teachers through Resource. Their IEP goals are the same exact as my son's IEP goals. So if they have the same IEPs for reading, I'm still not understanding the point that they still can meet with a reading teacher once a week, or other students can meet with reading recovery or whatever the game plan is for Sachem, and my student can't because he's special ed. So I just want the board, I know it's late, I know it's been a long meeting, I'm a Met fan, I want to go home as much as everybody else, but if you could please look in, because right now my son's falling through the cracks, he's getting zero reading. I understand that wasn't the intention, that's why his teacher got 3-hour course, and I do not think her 3-hour course dealing with the 11 kids she has in her class, trying to break them into groups at some point in time, is going to facilitate him learning or continuing his progress in reading. I just don't think it will. So if you could just look into this, look into students who are still delayed in reading, are not in any reading program, are not in reading recovery, are getting zero help in reading as it is, and a 3-hour course that a teacher took to try and break students into groups is not really, to me, a reading program for those who are still reading well below grade level. Thank you. I don't want to take up your time.
I know, Mrs. Slaughter. Thank you. We spoke last year at length. I would doubt that there's any elementary class that hasn't taught reading at this point, but I will look into it tomorrow, and you will get a phone call shortly thereafter.
They have not broken into their groups for their individual, yeah. Like in other words.
They must be getting reading instruction during the classroom time. It just seemed impossible.
General for the whole class, but have they broken into groups?
I'll have to follow up on that part, but it just made it seem like there's no reading being done in that class.
Well, there's reading to the whole group, but in other words, he has 11 kids in his class. Some are at all different levels because his special ed class. Some are reading at level. Some are reading well below level, like my son has. And, you know, I can even bring him into your office and say, Michael, have you done your reading yet? Because this is what I ask my son every day.
Right.
Well, Mom, Mrs. Nevins hasn't had the chance to break us into our groups yet. Then I ask Mrs. Nevins, yes, we are going to break into groups. We just haven't gotten there yet. Does she read to them in the class?
Right.
Is that the same as working?
Well, we're going to follow up on this. You can guarantee that.
Right. Nancy Roberts showed up. I know you. Thanks for waiting, Nancy, and being patient.
I just want to take a second that I got here at about 5 to 8, and I'm really not used to coming to Board of Ed meetings and not getting a parking space. I'm used to being like right in the front row. And,
well, you missed the fun.
I parked so far away, I thought I was in New Jersey. Reason being is,
you might have been in Dr. Beerwitz's district.
Well, actually, I walked into the lobby. The reason I thought I was in New Jersey is I saw so many red shirts, I thought I was at a Scarlet Knights basketball game. So rather than push through while you call my name, I thought it would be more appropriate just to wait till the end. But I just wanted to say that on behalf of all of us in the PTA Council, I just wanted to thank you so much for all the work that you do. And as fellow volunteers, we appreciate your countless hours and all the time that you spend to provide the best education possible for all our kids here. We enjoy working with you. It's an honor and a privilege, and I look forward to continuing to do so. So thank you so much, and I'd like to end the night by providing you a cup full of kisses from PTA Council.
Thank you. While Nancy's passing these out, any future agenda items, folks? Deborah?
Okay. Yes, for future agenda items, I'd like to discuss our ESL population and its growth. I'd also like the ESL program and like to know a little bit more about its structure. Did you hear that, Charlie?
Okay. ESL, yep.
And I don't know if anyone's aware, but Senator Trenzo has provided Sachem an additional unrestricted grant of $110,000. So I'd like to be, kept informed as to when that money comes to the district. And at that time, I'd like to also discuss the best way to allocate those funds or to what program, we want to allocate those funds to.
I have never heard of Senator Trenzo giving over $110,000.
I got it in writing. It's right here.
Is that the same writing from our county exec?
Okay. I don't know. Did you get
it's unrestricted, so can we have that too? I mean, can we share it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth it. I mean, once we confirm that the grant is coming in.
Well, we can play from some wood planks with that $110,000.
All right. Unrestricted.
I know, but I was thinking more towards our Suffolk Community College partnership.
We'll put it on. Let's wait till we get the money. We'll put it on the agenda and we'll discuss it. Any other agenda items, folks? Can I have a motion to go into exec session?
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, my dear.
Generous.
I try to be. Next meeting is Tuesday, November 21st. Don't forget to get out and vote. Vote early. Vote often. And a motion for exec session. So moved. Douglas and who else? And Fred.